Confederate cavalry leader Wade Hampton, who succeeded Jeb Stuart as the most prominent cavalry commander in Lee's army, also carried out a successful raid in mid-September 1864. He rode out and managed to round up 3,000 head of cattle and bring them back into the Army of Northern Virginia. Famous cattle raid, beefsteak raid, as it was called by many of the Confederates. Overall, however, there was a sense of stalemate at Petersburg and Richmond, and that stalemate provided a stark contrast to events that unfolded at about the same time in the Shenandoah Valley. Let's move to the valley now and see what's going on there. There was almost continuous military activity of some kind in the Shenandoah Valley throughout the war. There was guerrilla action. Major armies would march up and down the valley. We've seen that on the way to Gettysburg after Antietam. There's always some kind of activity there, a lot of raiding and so forth. But only two major campaigns, two really major campaigns. We've seen Hunter's movement into the valley. We talked about that before that. We saw Sigel in the valley. But the two most famous campaigns in the valley were Stonewall Jackson's in 1862 and Jubal Early's in 1864. And we will look at Early's now. Its origin lay in information coming to Lee's headquarters that David Hunter was marching up the valley toward Lynchburg, Lee feared. Lee could not afford to lose Lynchburg. Lynchburg was an important rail center. Enormous Confederate hospitals there. It was a vital city in that part of Virginia, and Lee was not willing to let it go. He called Jubal Early, who had replaced Richard Ewell as commander of the Second Corps in the Army of Northern Virginia, Stonewall Jackson's old corps, called him to Army headquarters and told him that he wanted Early to go to stop this federal threat against Lynchburg. And as they talked, Lee made it clear that he had a hierarchy of goals for Early in this operation. Number one, save Lynchburg. Push Hunter away from Lynchburg. If you accomplish that, march down the Shenandoah Valley toward the Potomac River, clear the valley of Federals. If you manage to do that, cross the Potomac and menace Washington. If you manage to do that, it might force Grant to pull strength away from the Richmond-Petersburg lines to deal with you, Early, up near Washington. That might open the way for Lee to accomplish something opposite the Army of the Potomac. So he's putting a lot on Early's table here. In a sense, it's similar to what the Confederates had hoped Jackson would accomplish in his Valley campaign, open a true second front in the state that would tie down a lot of federal strength and perhaps create opportunities for the Confederates at Richmond. Well, Jubal Early was a very colorful character. He was a Virginian, a West Pointer, hadn't stayed in the Army long, had become a lawyer right after he quit the Army, then came back in briefly for service in the Mexican War, then was a lawyer for the rest of the antebellum period. He was about 6 feet tall, but so plagued by arthritis that he was stooped. He looked shorter than he was. He looked a lot older than he was as well. He was a bachelor, although he fathered a number of children in his lifetime. He was called Old Jube by most of his men. At least some of the others called him Old Lop-Ear for some reason. He was a very sarcastic man, had a vitriolic pen and tongue. He really was adept at eviscerating people and took great pleasure in doing it. He especially made fun of people he thought were either happily married or foolishly in love. He didn't like officers to have their wives near camp in the winter, for example. He made it very hard on them. He was one of the most profane men in the Confederate Army by all accounts. Everyone said that. I wish they would have written down exactly some of the things he said so we'd know just what kinds of cursing he did. He was an old Whig. He'd voted against secession as a member of the Virginia Secession Convention in 1861, but once Virginia went with the Confederacy, he became the most diehard of Confederates, and after the war, he was one of the most unreconstructed of rebels and one of the most important and influential writers in the Lost Cause movement after the war. We'll talk about him in later lectures. He lived a comfortable life after the war as one of the front men for the Louisiana Lottery, along with P.G.T. Beauregard. They were paid a good deal of money just to draw numbers out of a cylinder for the Louisiana Lottery. And he spent a good deal of time attacking James Longstreet's character after the war. As a soldier, he had compiled a very strong record. He'd fought from First Manassas through all of the battles of the Army down to this stage of the war.